Hello, and welcome to this introductory podcast into the field of medievalism, where we will be learning about medievalist representations of women in power through the Lord of the Rings movie series. My name is Mattea Tomasino, and I will be your guide through this podcast. In the next half hour, give or take, we will define and demonstrate the concept of medievalism and analyze women of power in one of the most popular representations of the medieval period, the Lord of the Rings movies. I would also like to preface this in saying that the historical information and comparisons are based off of Middle and Late European medieval women in power. This podcast will be divided into three parts. The first part will provide a definition of medievalism and some examples of books, movies, TV shows, and video games that fall under the category of medieval representations. The second part will then consist of a few interviews with some of my friends and family who do not have a formal background in medieval history, discussing with them about how the books, film, and video games they have consumed represent medieval queens or women in power. In the third part, we will then go through an analysis of how the Lord of the Rings movies have represented medieval women in power. During this analysis, we will make comparisons between the movies and real medieval women who held economic, political, and or social power, and some problems with this franchise's representation of medieval women. This discussion will lead us to conclude with a few remarks on what consumers and creators of various representations of the medieval period should think about moving forward. Now that we have our map to Mordor, if you will, let's dive into it. So here is part one, an introduction to medievalism. For those listeners unfamiliar with the concept of medievalism, you may be thinking, what is she talking about? So let's start with just a definition. There are many definitions for medievalism, but the one that I believe explains it the best is an amalgamation of one I heard in a class a few years ago and my own understanding of this concept. Medievalism is art, literature, scholarship, entertainment, and media that turn to the medieval period as a source of inspiration, and in doing so, comment explicitly or implicitly, and by comparison or contrast, on both the artist and the society it was created in. Examples of explicit medievalism are the series Vikings or Game of Thrones, where it is very obvious that these are inspired by or depict the medieval period. Examples of implicit medievalism are the Harry Potter series or Star Wars, where there are elements or ideas derived from the medieval period or our understandings of the medieval period, but it is not in-your-face medieval, if that makes sense. For instance, the Jedis in Star Wars are like medieval knights. Now that we have a better understanding of what medievalism means, let's move on to the next part of our podcast, the interviews. As previously mentioned, I have interviewed a few of my friends and family members who do not have a formal background in medieval history to ask them about their thoughts on the representations of medieval women in power in film, literature, and/or video games. I started each interview by asking my guests to consider the following. Based on the film, literature, and video games they have consumed, what is their understanding of how medieval queens, or women who held social, economic, or political power, acted and were perceived in the medieval period? This could be in terms of how they are viewed and treated by others, how they used their power, and how they navigate and interact with the world around them. I then continued to ask them questions about certain points they made to really understand the overall image that these forms of entertainment are constructing for their audiences about medieval women in power. The goal of these interviews is to demonstrate these constructed images shape and influence our understandings of history. Here are some clips of these interviews. The first interview is with Sydney, who reads a lot of fantasy novels, which are almost always forms of medievalism.
I guess I'll just start off by asking, based on media you've consumed, like books, TV shows, movies, even video games, what kind of impression or kind of information do they give you about medieval queens or women who held significant social, economic, or political power, and how they were viewed, how they interacted with people around them in their environment, and how they might have used their power. So you can just go ahead and give your thoughts on that.
I feel like the media I consume most would be like books and particularly fantasy novels. So I think that's where I would draw most of my impressions from. A series that I read and enjoyed quite recently in the fantasy genre is Throne of Glass. And there's a particular character, her name is Selena, and she is a very, very skilled, very qualified assassin. So she is pretty much the most significant assassin in her field. And yet when she's brought into a competition where she needs to prove her skills against other people who would consider themselves assassins as well, she is very frequently like belittled by the king, suppressed by the king, and that's all to do with her physical stature, being the only woman in the tournament, and despite the fact that she is significantly more training and is much more qualified than all the other people in the tournament. So I always got the impression that she had to work twice as hard as any man with half her qualifications just simply due to her gender. So that really stood out to me as, yeah, just how being a female really impacted her ability to use her power and demonstrate herself in her field. Another character from that same series is Maeve, and she is the queen of kind of a far-off land of Fae, and her whole betrayal is, or her whole depiction is that she has to be quite vicious and quite cutthroat to be able to wield that position of power. It seems that when a man is in control, we see several other characters throughout that series, they can wield that power in any way they want, and they don't have to present themselves a certain way. Whereas with Maeve, we really get the impression that every move she makes, every public appearance is very calculated. She's presenting herself just a certain way to try and maintain that power balance, because if for a woman to be in power and to be soft and kind or nurturing, no one will take her seriously. So you really have to wield yourself like a weapon. You have to choose your words very carefully to be able to almost show yourself as worthy of having that position. I feel like that's a real reflection of the era, because most commonly it was men in power that we would see, and women were often just kind of supporting roles almost.
Would you say then they kind of had to jump into a masculine role, like kind of shed their femininity in some ways to become, like, be respected more by a broader audience?
I definitely got the impression that she had to almost compartmentalize her femininity, and when she was in that position of power, when she was dealing with addressing different situations in court or dealing with her subjects, she definitely wielded herself in a way that was most similar to how we would see men handle themselves. Very self-assured, very confident, very dominant. And we never saw that facade like fracture or falter in any way. It was very much held in place. And I think that was to try and command the power and the respect of those around her.
Yeah.
I've also noticed, and I personally believe, that the role of the authors, like the author's gender, plays a really huge part in how the women are portrayed as well. Because I'm sure for a female author, most people who are female have had some sort of instance of their gender affecting a type of situation they may have been in. And so I think for women, they like to make these really strong, really dominant female characters to kind of help break out of that mold that we sometimes see women put into this era. Whereas I feel like books that are written by men, or perhaps movies that are directed by men, we sometimes see women take a little bit more of a sidestep. That's not always true. We can't necessarily generalize that to everything, but I've definitely noticed that I tend to lean towards and prefer novels written by female authors because of the way they depict women and how strong and powerful they're shown to be.
Good, good. Also, too, would you say that these fantasy kind of medievalist representations of women and women in power, would you say do they seem like they'd be accurate to the medieval period based on what you know? It's okay if you don't have that much experience.
Yeah, my knowledge of the medieval period is not very extensive. I tend to have an image in my mind of kings and knights and like all these people kind of being dominant during this period and like kind of the male breadwinner role. And so I think, unfortunately, I feel like women tend to take a bit of a side seat in that era. That's just my understanding. So I almost feel like some of these are perhaps going against the mold, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
So I'm also reading these Throne of Glass books, and I know the author has another series called A Court of Thorns and Roses, and they also depict the main character as being somebody in power. Sorry for anybody who hasn't read this. This will be a bit of spoilers for this series. But eventually she makes it into the role of being a high lady, which is essentially kind of a ruler of a court. The world is divided into different courts. And we see her kind of struggle with different dynamics of people who do respect her and don't respect her. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, definitely. So within her own court, she's held in very high regard by her people. She's very well respected. Her power and strength are acknowledged because she is someone of considerable magical abilities and just like personal and physical strength. So we see her like held in quite high regard and someone who is really considered to be quite knowledgeable and quite powerful. But as soon as you take a step outside the boundaries of her own court, there are six other rulers, the vast majority of whom do not hold her in that same regard. There's probably two or three particular rulers of other courts who like throw slander at her for they basically imply that she had to fabricate her own role because she was the first ever high lady. They've always been ruled by high lords in the past. They basically throw like slander her for saying she had to fabricate her own role to get her way into power, like she didn't earn her way there. And I think again that just shows that in this particular era, people are so used to seeing a man in power that when a woman is in power, not only is it unexpected, it makes them uncomfortable. And so they go out of their way to almost belittle and try and like damage the esteem of that woman so that she'll kind of remove herself from that position.
The second interview is with Connor, who plays many video games with medieval elements, as well as watches TV shows like The Witcher that represent the medieval period.
I'd say that overall, they're viewed quite strongly, usually stronger than most of the men around them. And they are slightly sexualized. Well, I guess regular, you know. Moderately sexualized, because I feel like, but it's also changed over time. So like if you're looking at like any of the fantasy characters and stuff, like women in power, you'll see that like if you look back at old fantasy, especially old fantasy, it kind of reflects social views at that time. So you'll see women as like daintier, they're not even daintier, I think that's the wrong way of putting it, but they're more heavily sexualized. Whereas if you look, and they still are sexualized in current like literature and movies and TV shows and video games and such, but if you look at, let's like for example The Witcher, you've got the, I can't remember what she's the queen of, but she's a queen in that show, and she's not sexualized in any shape or form. However, when you look at, you know, let's say games like Dragon Age Inquisition, right? It's a very story-driven kind of game, and actually, for the most part, there's not a whole lot of sexualization of people. There's no over-exaggeration of breasts or, you know, stuff like that. But then but there's still that sort of, like, flirty attitude, but it's less sexualized again, more strong characters, strong women characters, especially in contrast to the men around them. And then, you know, again, if you look back farther to games like Lara Croft, which would be like, you know, when games started becoming more and more popular, you'll see that there's more sexualization. Although she's badass, she's sexy first kind of thing, right? A bit of both. But you find that the sexualization, at least from a storytelling standpoint, and that kind of view is like changing over time.
Would you say as well, like between kings and queens, would you say that you see that it represents, you know, medieval women as having medieval queens or women who have socio-economic or political power as having their own authority, or as it being kind of they're assisting their king and their power lies in the way they support their king, or is it of their own accord?
I think it depends on the context and which, you know, fantasy you're looking at. But for, you know, again, going back to The Witcher, I think, you know, that's a really good example. Because it's very modern. It's, you know, it's still being made today. So you see that kind of, you see a little more power in the queen's hands kind of thing, rather than, you know, being controlled by men. She controls more men than any man stands up to her kind of thing. But she still has to, you can see that there's that, you know, fighting over the patriarchy kind of thing going on. So although she has to be more cruel or more strong than a king would be, or as strong in that sense.
Would you say too that are these women represented as women wielding significant political, social, or economic power? Would you say they wield it and it's demonstrated as something that's pretty like many women do it, or is it exceptional? Is it only the very few women who do it can attain that?
I'd say probably the very few. It's still kind of a they're still a minority in their own, I guess, their own right. I guess, you know, there's most of the time when they're portrayed, let's say in like a medieval kind of you know, setting, it's more so like, it's, I feel like games try to reflect that time, unless they're really, you know, out there fantasy thing where there's, you know, social and, you know, gender roles and stuff like this aren't as concrete. But I feel like, yeah, for the most part, it's reflected similar to our society in the sense. So you see that kind of, you know, that power difference.
The last interview is with Ruth, who has read plenty of historical fiction novels that often recreate the histories of real medieval women in positions of power.
So based on media you've consumed, so whether that be books, movies, TV shows, or video games, what kind of impression or understanding have they given you about medieval queens or medieval women who held social, economic, or political power? And how these women interacted in their environments, were perceived by others, and might have wielded that power.
I'm going to respond in the context of historical fiction. And I think it varies because it really depends on the authors and their background. And I think on the whole that my impression is that there's not a lot of actual good source material for them to base on from the medieval time for women. And that being said, I think their portrayals, for the most part, through the eyes of historical fiction, they were largely seen as pawns getting shipped off as marriage chattel to seal deals, etc., but also as cunning wheelers and dealers working in the background, so to speak. I think a lot of the historical female queen figures maintained a lot of their power through ensuring that their progeny got on or stayed on thrones. Like, that seemed to be a lot of, like, the more, you know, famous ones. For example, like Margaret Anjou, Eleanor of Aquitaine. It seemed like it, rather than have overt displays of powers, a lot of them were more like, in the case of Margaret Anjou, she had a relationship with the Earl of Warwick, who was known as the Kingmaker. So it seemed like they got the job done, but they had to find ways to do it because of whatever the ways of the time were. For example, some used their virtue as a weapon to achieve their ends, such as Elizabeth Woodville holding back her virginity to get what she wanted. So I think on the whole, the way that women were portrayed in historical fiction, the way that queenship was seen, the impression I got is they did wield power. but it was more of a covert power rather than overt. I think that being said, I'm the type of person when I read something, I have to run and go get the facts, because I think that there's sort of an illusory truth effect with historical fiction. If you hear the same false information repeated over and over, or if it's aligned with a few facts, you start to think the whole thing is facts. So although there did seem to be, you know, from book to book and author to author, there did seem to be some common threads which make you think, oh, this was probably how it really was, because, I mean, that seems to be the overall perception. But I think sometimes a lot of these authors just went based off of what they had, you know, not necessarily a fact, but what they had started to assume was factual based on what they'd heard.
Would you say that there was kind of a binary between masculine and feminine power, like from this historical fiction that you read?
Mm-hmm.
Does it kind of seem like in actual medieval history there was a binary between this is your masculine power and this is your feminine power?
I'm not sure if I'm exactly answering what you're asking me, but I do think part of the problems with any kind of medium like historical fiction where they have leeway, they're also pandering to readers, right? They're giving you what you want to see or read. And a lot of times we want, like, to see, you know, a romance where the woman is, like, swept away and happy ever after and stuff. So I think maybe they were slotted into that role. And either had to be one or the other. Like, if we look at people like Joan of Arc, you know, or Margaret, they were really, you know, given that masculine kind of tag, and they weren't, I guess, they were, you know, maybe we see them looking back as one-dimensional that way, either or. Like some of the books that I read that I was most interested in was, you know, with the Elizabeths, where, I can't remember which Elizabeth it was, Elizabeth I maybe, or Elizabeth Woodville. She was actually seen as maybe lacking in femininity, or seen as cold. And I felt it was because she was actually just an analytical, pragmatic, extremely pragmatic woman getting the job done that she needed to get done. I think the men would be perceived differently. They wouldn't be perceived as cold. They wouldn't be perceived as shallow or harsh. They would just be seen as a guy in a job doing his job.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there was definitely a little bit of a difference. I do think too, when a woman was clever and cunning, those, again, they might've been portrayed in historical fiction as having these feminine wiles, right? Where maybe that wasn't quite how they got it done. You know, maybe in reality, it wasn't necessarily that way. But that seems to be when we're filling in the gaps between the facts, it seems like often maybe they are resorting to the typical expectations of how we think it could have been done, right?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a couple more questions. One of them is, do you think then that women's power, medieval women's power in the historical fiction that you've read or consumed, is that, do you think it's more of a power that's been more almost sexualized? Like you said, some of the people you've read about have used their power as a virgin, kind of wielded that.
Yeah.
Or different powers that compared to a man who maybe doesn't wield it in that way.
I don't think we can kind of overall categorize. I do think definitely in some cases, but I don't think across the board. I think the women of that time were very different from each other. And I really don't think necessarily I think it really depended on the woman. But maybe it was sexualized in the sense that she was either considered getting something through using sex, or she was devoid of that. And then she was seen as really hard-nosed and completely asexual, maybe, losing the black or white.
Do you think that, particularly looking at the media, not necessarily the history, but the way the media portrays it, were these women portrayed as being unusual to wield this kind of power and in the ways they wielded it? Or, like, were there very few of them who were actually doing it? Or does it portray them as, you know, more plenty of women were able to do this who were elite or had held power?
I think just by the nature of the author's choice to write about these women made them think that there was something exceptional there and not typical. So I think for the most part, and even the language that was used, I think they were seen as not the norm, that they stood out. It's hard to answer, because that being said, if you read enough of that stuff, it seems more common, just because, again, it's another bias, right? The more you kind of experience it, the more you make an assumption that it was fairly common. But I think I'm trying to think of it in the context of maybe one particular book where the ones that were written about, I think we know about because they stood out for some reason, or the documentation was there for some reason. So I don't know if that totally answers the question. But even when you look at the kinds of things that they did of that time, the way that they went about, they figured out a way to get around the system. So I don't think it was necessarily
unique,
or we didn't know, because all the other ladies too were being very stealthy in the way they operated in the time, right?
Awesome.
Now that we've listened to these interviews, there are some common themes that stood out in each of the guests' answers, despite them all discussing different mediums of entertainment. These included the sexualization of women in power. All of the guests mentioned that the women who held power were often sexualized, whether by the portrayal of their character with more revealing outfits, or by the nature in which the other characters would perceive or discuss them. The representation of strong women in the roles of power was another commonality. Many of the women discussed were strong-willed, brave, and respected by many of the other characters in these representations. However, as mentioned by all of the guests, these representations did vary by author or artist and seemed to be catered to what the audience or the creator of the work wanted to see in their women of power. Therefore, the guests seemed to feel that often the women were not reflective of the women who really existed in the medieval period, but more reflective of what we as a society idealize in powerful women. Another prominent theme was that despite these women being able to wield power, they were often viewed differently from men, criticized, and finally, they promoted exceptionalism, in that these representations of women in power promoted the idea that they were few and far between. They were the exceptions. That only certain women who had economic, social, or political power could actually wield it or navigate it significantly. Now that we've heard the perspectives of a few people on the medieval representations they consumed, let's do a medievalist examination of medieval queenship and women in power in the Lord of the Rings movies. For those who haven't seen the movies or read the books, fair warning, this part of the podcast does contain spoilers. This movie series follows the story of Frodo Baggins, a hobbit, on his journey across a fantasy world to defeat an ancient evil, Sauron, by throwing a malicious and powerful ring into a volcano, of all places. Along Frodo's journey, we encounter many fantastical beings, including some powerful elven women, the niece of a king, and a vile female spider. These are some of the very few powerful women, and almost the only women, represented in these movies. So, as an initial statement, we can confirm that these movies represent a very male-dominated world, not just because almost all of the rulers are male, but also because there are significantly more men than there are women depicted in these movies. This reflects that J.R.R. Tolkien, the author of the books, and Peter Jackson, the director of the movies, could have understood that in the medieval period, men, by a large degree, were dominant over women, to the point where it seems few women even mattered enough to include them in the narrative. Additionally, it is very clear that Middle Earth is predominantly white, which perpetuates the harmful stereotype of medieval Europe also being predominantly white. We will discuss problems such as this after our analysis. Let's get into our powerful female characters now. Well, there's only four of them. And one of them is a giant spider. They are Arwen, Galadriel, Eowyn, and Shelob. Arwen is an elf and the daughter of the Lord of Rivendell, where some of the elves live in Middle-earth. She is the first female of status or power that we meet, and right from the beginning, she is portrayed as feminine, ethereal, maternal, gentle, and, because of the white light shining around her, when she quite literally rides onto the scene, pure. These are very stereotypical features often attributed to medieval queens and princesses. She does have healing magic, but when she arrives to help a severely poisoned Frodo, she says that she has to bring him to her father in order to heal him, thus supporting a hierarchy of power by quite literally having a man's magical power be more powerful than hers. Additionally, her entire character development centers around her love for Aragorn, the heir to the throne of Gondor. Despite her position of power, she is only seen navigating love, never any other spheres of power. The only agency Arwen displays is that she chooses to sacrifice her elven immortality to live as a mortal with Aragorn, despite her father not wanting her to. She is not a very complex character either, unfortunately. While she does accurately emulate the importance of marriage and children among medieval royalty, she perpetuates an image of medieval women in power as not being complex and navigating many different areas of their lives, including marriage, politics, economical, and social affairs. The other elven woman in power is Galadriel, arguably one of the most powerful and wise beings in Middle-earth. She rules another elven realm called Lothlorien with her husband Celeborn, and she holds one of the three elven rings of power, making her significant and very powerful. She, like Arwen, is also portrayed as very feminine, but she wields more power. Galadriel is integral to the journey of the Fellowship of the Ring, which is the group of male companions, including Frodo, who make it their duty to bring the ring to Mordor and defeat Sauron. Not only does she provide them with guiding visions, but she also provides them with weapons and tools to aid them in their journey. We can see that she has great reach as she holds an omniscient-like power and commands the respect of many, including men, elves, hobbits, and even a dwarf's affection, who are all from other regions of Middle-earth. While she is not depicted as engaging in any warfare, she does engage in the politics of the Ring of Power by choosing to side with the Fellowship and helping them to defeat Sauron. She also wields great magic skills, but she is not depicted wielding any sort of physical power, which is usually characterized as a very male power. She reflects our society's understandings that there were powerful queens and women in the medieval period that did hold great power. However, she still reflects the ideas of these women being confined to a typically feminine power rather than a more typically masculine one, such as the physical strength and a prowess in warfare. She reflects women such as Maria of Castile from the 15th century, who wielded great influence and power alongside their husbands. Maria acted as a queen lieutenant of the kingdoms of Aragon and Valencia, the Principality of Catalunya, and the islands of Mallorca, while her husband Alfonso V was off conquering and controlling other territories. During this time, she wielded full governmental powers over these territories. Maria was respected by many and a significant political and socioeconomic power. She essentially governed like a king. Galadriel represents this skilled, wide-reaching power. However, she falls short in that her power doesn't seem to extend to the masculine-type powers of a king. This demonstrates that while Tolkien, Jackson, and many others in our society can conceptualize and understand that medieval women held great power, they can still only see this power as mainly being confined to stereotypically female categories. The most prominent female character in the Lord of the Rings movies is Eowyn. Eowyn is the niece of the human king of Rohan. She is the only one of the powerful female characters who participates significantly in masculine and feminine arenas. She is complex and has the respect of her king and the people around her. She demonstrates the importance of marriage, one of the typical duties of medieval women in power, but she also subverts her gender role by going into battle under the guise of a man. This is reminiscent of Matilda of Tuscany from the 11th and 12th centuries, who never formally went into battle, but was known by her contemporaries as being a very skilled military and political leader and strategist. For example, she was very active in the investiture controversy, which involved the debate of who should be allowed to make war. Matilda both participated in the medieval female duties of bearing children while also engaging in the male sphere of politics and warfare. Eowyn similarly straddles these two arenas. She also depicts agency in her choice to go to war despite women not being allowed. Eowyn also has a unique power as a woman. She is able to slay the evil Witch King because he cannot be killed by any man. Yet, she declares that she is no man and defeats him. Her character clearly demonstrates our society's understanding that despite there being gender roles for medieval women in power, women still worked around them, and maybe hints at Tolkien and Jackson's acceptance that medieval women and modern women can be capable of things that men may not be, just as the reverse is also true in some cases. Eowyn is the most developed and complex female character in these movies. However, her representation does not show her interacting in politics, which we do have evidence of daughters of kings and sisters of kings and other women related to kings doing so, such as Urraca Fernandez from 11th century Spain, who is very active in politics and even refounded a bishopric of Tui. The Lord of the Rings movies only demonstrate this kind of power for the male characters, which is problematic because medieval women did very much interact in politics, sometimes more than their male counterparts, such as Matilda. Finally, we come to the giant spider Shelob, who, while being female, is only referenced a few times as she. Shelob carries great physical power and is very intimidating, but she is also characterized as evil, repulsive, and vile. Shelob completely subverts the gender norms by displaying no maternal, gentle, or feminine attributes. She instead displays very physical, masculine ones. In tandem with this, she is also seen as a perversion of nature, which illustrates a very harmful image of medieval women. And for that matter, maybe even modern-day women who completely reject the strict gender expectations. It suggests that powerful medieval women who did this were seen as disrupting the natural order, which in some cases was true, as demonstrated by Blanche of Namur from the 14th century, who along with her husband King Magnus were heavily criticized for upsetting the very patriarchal gender equilibrium. They were criticized for being sexually deviant and for Magnus being too effeminate, in turn, which meant that Blanche was probably being too masculine. However, there were cases like Matilda of Tuscany's where women were in these more masculine roles and not reviled by almost everyone. Yes, Matilda did have her critics, but she still commanded respect and had a great many men and women who admired her. Same with Eleanor of Aquitaine from the 12th century, who organized rebellions, along with her son Richard I, against her own husband, Henry II. While she was criticized for stepping out of her prescriptive female role and what was thought to be a proper wife and mother, we see that she was still respected. This is present in a letter from the Archbishop of Rouen, who heavily criticizes her for her role in the rebellion and implores her to go back to her husband. But despite him chastising her, he still calls her pious and acknowledges her power and importance in her kingdom. Therefore, such a harsh portrayal of Shelob can be problematic because it demonstrates that Tolkien, Jackson, and many in our society may think that medieval women could push boundaries of their gender role, but for them to go completely into some of the masculine roles was universally seen as abhorrent and a perversion of nature. Overall, it seems that these women were more heavily inspired by the theory of how women in power were supposed to be in the medieval period, which is feminine, wise, gentle, maternal, and not supposed to completely subvert the gender norms. Tolkien and Jackson did incorporate that in practice. Some of these women did go outside this theory, but this is not the dominant narrative for women in Lord of the Rings. The movies, despite having some accurate representations of medieval queens and women in power, they have many inaccuracies, and it is where these inaccuracies lie that causes problems in the medieval history that these movies are promoting. First, these movies promote the long-held ideas among both our society and many historians that women in power who were able to wield their power were the exceptions, when in fact there were many women who held power and wielded it effectively and significantly. Second, the movies do not display these women navigating the complex structures of power present in their lives. Maybe at a very surface level with Eowyn getting into battle through disguising herself as a man, but other than that, nothing else really. This navigation of these power structures were essential to medieval queens and women in power, and the Lord of the Rings movies ignore this. Third, none of these women access any sort of religious power, which was a great source of power and agency for women in the medieval period. For example, many women mystics, such as Hildegard of Bingen, wielded great influence and power in both religious and secular affairs. Finally, as mentioned earlier, all of the women were white, not counting the spider, of course, and perpetuate a very harmful depiction of the medieval period as a white utopia. This simply isn't true. There were many people of different races and religions present in Europe during this period. For example, in Spain, there was a whole Muslim-ruled area for many years called Al-Andalus. And additionally, there were even some women who weren't white, who attained high levels of status and power. For example, Urrea from the Banu Qasi dynasty, who married the son of the king of the Spanish kingdom of Navarre. In conclusion, the representations of women in power in Lord of the Rings does an injustice to medieval women in power. It perpetuates that women who had power were the exceptions, that they didn't access power in complex ways, such as through religion, that they were completely villainized if they stepped too far outside of their gender roles, and that women of color in power, or women of color, period, simply didn't exist in medieval Europe. The Lord of the Rings not only reflects these already held views from Tolkien and Jackson, but also from our own society, and it further perpetuates them. And some of these perceptions, such as the lack of representation of race, can have modern day consequences, as we have had many white supremacists use them to justify horrible acts, and many misogynists using some of the perceived medieval gender roles to do the same. And this is not only with Lord of the Rings, but many of the other depictions of the medieval period, as we see from the earlier interviews. We have to acknowledge these problems as consumers and producers of these representations, in order to help do justice to the history, and also to people living today who deal with the repercussions of inaccurate and dangerous representations of the medieval period. Thank you for joining me today. I hope to leave you now with a better understanding of medievalism, how it is present in many forms of entertainment, and some of the misconceptions that can come with it of both medieval history and our modern society. And with that, I hope to have inspired you to examine your own medieval representations that you've seen beyond the confines of Middle Earth.